JMBlog.com podcast number 6. Version of Firefox coming out. Have you tried the beta?
I haven't. You know, I haven't done too much exploring into the browser war, but I've heard more and more that people are liking Chrome, and it's definitely creeping up on my radar in terms of a browser to try again. Maybe you could explain to me what the benefits are of this new Firefox 4.
Yeah, I think it's they're selling it as having a lot of JavaScript improvements and stuff like that, performance improvements. But I used an early beta. And I was not very happy with it, and I'm using a later beta, or maybe the 4.0 version. I think it might have just been released, because it's better than it was in the early betas, but I don't really like it. I think Firefox has definitely fallen behind to Chrome. Like, there was an era when people had their Firefox browser. I mean the kind of early adopter users. They would be using Firefox and using a lot of add-ons and bookmarklets and stuff like that. So you could add a page to Delicious, or you could use a bookmarklet on your WordPress blog or your Tumblr blog. And now I think there's devices like the Google Share button on Chrome. That's one little button up in the corner, and it drops down to give you a lot of those same type of options, depending on how you configure it. And there's a lot of add-ons and plugins now that simplify a lot of that. Like, there's a certain pattern of what a lot of users do with the browser. And yeah, Chrome really is catering to the cutting edge. Like you say, it's got like a lot of the buzz.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I try to wean myself off of Facebook, I would like an option where I could share a lot of the cool sites that I find onto my blog and then push it out to Twitter and Facebook. But I'd like to keep that information on my own content distributor versus on Facebook. So is that something I can use the new Chrome for?
That's a good question. I'd like to find that out. I think a lot of the cutting edge features you are going to see in Chrome and Firefox, I think, has moved more to the middle of the market. So if you're looking for something that's new and cool, it's just they're catering to developers and you know, a certain subset of web users. And I would say, yeah, there's a lot of very savvy, like, Firefox users, people that are, like, you know, they're informed and they you know, made the decision to download it instead of just use IE or, say, Safari. But I think a lot of those people are gravitating toward Chrome. It is growing. I'm not a terribly bitter critic of Safari. I think it's okay. I think you're not a fan of Safari. Yeah, it's not a great browser. I don't like it as much as Chrome. But, you know, people talk about how it has some of the same underlying parts as Chrome, but it varies in some ways. And I like using it as a second browser, so I'll use Chrome and than Safari. I don't know. I pretty much ignore Firefox these days. And then there was another browser, you know, because Chrome just sort of has releases a lot, but their latest one is called Chrome 10. And then there's Firefox 4 just coming out, and they're talking about having more versions out later this year, so they're looking for a fast development cycle. And then, you know, and there's a lot of news out there about Microsoft's IE9, and people are saying this is the most standards-compliant browser that Microsoft has ever released. But, of course, that's certainly a low standard. And I mean, I think that, you know, IE6 and IE7 are just nightmares, and everybody knows that and everything. But you know that IE8 isn't that good, and Windows XP users are stuck with that. And I've heard they're about 40% of web traffic, which makes sense. A lot of people use Windows XP computers still, business and home use. And if, for people that want to browse the web and do, you know, some other basic tasks, like Windows XP basically works for them still to some extent, you know. But since we don't have any Windows installations, we haven't, I don't think, tried IE9. Have you experienced that at work? Or
no, I use IE8 only when I'm forced to at work.
Okay.
But I think it's still horrible.
It is terrible, but you know, like, I remember when, you know, when we were still running Windows XP here, I remember testing stuff on what was like an emulator that emulated IE6, IE7, IE8. And I got to tell you, I mean, IE8 is it usually just looks a little broken when you do like really basic CSS that any other browser handles well. It just destroys stuff if you're in IE7 or IE6. Like they're just villains.
Yeah, whenever we open up tickets and QA finds issues, is always in IE. It's never like so-and-so page looks broken in Firefox. It's usually always an issue with IE.
To get back to better browsers, Chrome, you know, one of the things they're pushing now is the Chrome Web Store. It's trying to push like web apps, and you know, it's an interesting idea. It often just launches specialized versions of websites, but that's the idea. It's a web app. But you know, it is an interesting place to look for like for apps and tools on the web. And one thing I found that I thought was really cool, and it is just a website you can go to. It's the Aviary HTML5 photo editor. It really is pretty good, and it's nice and fast. And you know, I was using it on that single core, you know, older computer we have, not our newer one, and running Linux Mint, and I didn't have to deal with Flash, so I didn't have to deal with like the third rate Flash on Linux or the second rate Flash on Mac, which is all we can really do, right? With our equipment, and so it's like it's really nice. It's just nice and crisp and effective. It has some basic effects. You can put text on it. You know, I used it on the Parakeets blog at blogs.sf3am.com/parakeets. If you want to look at that photo I posted, I put some text on it to label it, a picture of Dodger, and then put the blog's URL on it. And, you know, I found it very fast and good, you know, experience for just, you know, doing some basic photo editing online. Of course, you know, there's good programs like Photoshop and GNU image manipulation program to use on your desktop. This still makes sense in a lot of cases, but I know we've used Picnic before. Like, well, I haven't. I think you have too, right? Sometimes. And I don't know. I like the Aviary HTML5 editor better than the Flash Aviary.
Yeah, I think too. Aviary has done a really good job of being a social open company. They're doing a lot of integration and getting a lot of talk and a lot of buzz. And I think, unfortunately for Picnic, now that they've been purchased by Google, they're falling into the get shelved, you know, arena like so many of their other companies, and they're just dwindling in terms of buzz, in terms of innovation.
Isn't that crazy that you would think this? What I got to admit, even though the history of Google acquisitions hasn't been obviously that great as you referenced, I in terms of the individual companies and how they were, you know, promoted after they got inside the Googleplex, you know, like Dodgeball, they just let go. They really didn't develop Jaiku. They bought all these things, and I guess they hired the people away, and Facebook has done stuff like that with like drop.io. They just shut that service down, and they bought it out, and they just wanted the person to work for them, but they don't have like that service up. You know, like that happens a lot. These big companies buy the services up, and then they really don't. They either neglect them, like it seems maybe is happening, or worse, like to try to just poach like the programmers or whoever to get to use on other projects. And I mean, obviously that's all fair if you pay for the company, but of course it could be disappointing to fans of the site because Picnic did have some buzz, and I guess you do hear more about Aviary, and you would have. I guess I thought they were pretty close. They have different approaches, different styles, but they're both kind of cool. And, you know, a lot of people like to just do a lot of stuff in the cloud, including photo editing, right? And so it was like, it was looking like a big deal that Picnic had been bought. We're talking about Picnic, right? PICNIK.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a site that it's It seemed like with Google backing, they were going to be big, and there was a huge space to move into. But I don't know if they're even like say integrated with Picasa Web Albums. I don't use Picasa Web Albums, so I can't bother to check. But
I think they are. You know,
by now, huh? Yeah.
I work for Webshots, and we recently found out that you know they no longer offer the API service for our users. And when I talked with the people at Picnic, they said there wasn't enough traffic. And I thought, okay, you know, they can't manage and maintain that base. So, again, that kind of shows me that they're slimming down and cutting down and not trying to expand the universe as much. I also know that Aviary has integrated with Animoto. They announced at South by Southwest. They have this new partner solution, which Webshots is also integrating. And
okay.
We were announced in their press release, and Aviary is doing it too. So Aviary is sort of getting on this trend of these new and up-and-coming photo services and really trying to stake a claim in the space. And, you know, it's a small space. There's not a lot of competitors out there, and you want to continually keep evolving and doing things. So many companies have fallen by the wayside in the photo space. And we're seeing a lot more come up. Like Instagram is hugely popular on the iPhone. And there's a lot more smaller apps coming up through the ranks. So it'll be really interesting to see who kind of takes the piece of the pie in the photo space. From editing to sharing. You know,
mobile,
we talk about Flickr a lot and what's going on with them. And, you know, I think the partner integration for Aviary with Animoto is going to be really helpful for them to kind of keep evolving. And I think that's what consumers expect and want. You know, they want you to stay on trend and keep evolving with the space. And so many times companies have their one thing and they keep adding to it instead of evolving it. So I think Picnic is just adding to what they already have, more backgrounds or frames or whatever, and they're not really evolving it. So it's a big thing for a lot of companies to think about. Browsers as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of how we got down this path. But, you know, think about the user and evolve instead of just adding stuff, you know? After a while, you get to a point where you just have too much stuff and no user is going to use it.
Yeah, and this is really good information for listeners, and I want to point out that this podcast is brought to you by lovebirdsconsulting.com. So that's that if you really want Jessica to apply her very sharp analysis to your business, or if you want some help developing your website, your social media presence, check out lovebirdsconsulting.com.
Yes, you're talking to the co-founders.
Yeah, absolutely. It's our shop, and we got some cool stuff going on there. So we're looking forward to what we got going on in the year ahead, some of the projects we're working on. What very very small project, but I wanted to mention it was PacificPelican.us/CMS. It's basically just a PHP-based URL shortening and file uploading app. It's available to download for free. It's just a script that I'm running to use as my main URL shortener. And you can do it too. You just drop the code on your web server that can run PHP. You don't need a database. You just use text files, and so just download the code at pacificpelican.us/cms. There's a link to the development blog that'll have the download for you. We're gonna move into our traditional area of discussion that runs, I think, pretty frequently through a lot of these podcasts, the iOS apps. I just want to mention Mobile RSS Pro this time because I didn't mention it last time and it was on the show notes. And if you use Google Reader, and it syncs with Google Reader, so it's not a general, you know, import your OPML file like RSS Reader. It's just a Google Reader app. But Mobile RSS Pro is a pretty useful app for syncing with Google Reader to read your blogs or news or whatever your podcasts, whatever you follow with your RSS feeds in Google Reader, which is an RSS reader. You can subscribe to different RSS feeds around the web, and then when sites have new content, it'll aggregate that content into a sort of a river of news, as it's been referred to by people like Dave Weiner. Have you tried this thing at all, Jessica?
I haven't, but I'm curious if Google offers a similar product or a similar web experience and how it compares.
Google doesn't have an official Google Reader app. Yeah, they leave the API open for this, so that is pretty cool, right? You know, it's this thing. I think it's like $3 for the so-called pro version. Everything is called pro on the iOS apps.
Pro equals pay.
Yeah, for a few dollars, though, you're paying $3 for an app that calls itself pro. It's just, there's something kind of funny about that. But people, there's a certain, you hear this certain bitterness sometimes from developers, it seems, about the price of apps. There's an occasional like lamentation that the expectation is 99 cents or a few bucks. It's become, you know, people complain about bottled water. People complain about how people are cheap about iOS apps. Maybe I'm just like listening to like, you know, reading like what developers are saying or whatever, but it's just kind of like, people don't, that's a terrible analogy, but you know, people don't think that they're being paid enough for those apps, you know. Like, of course, the Rovio, makers of Angry Birds, the people that are making tons of money, of course, are happy, right? Making big deals and making a lot of revenue. But what about, like, the small creator? It has a lot to do, I've heard, with how you are in the App Store, you know, how you surface it. You know, the outside marketing can do so much, but a lot of people buy based on App Store exploration, so it just depends on whether Apple surfaces you or not.
Yeah, I definitely think we'll see prices start to go up in the App Store, but I don't know that they'll go too high. I think what a lot of people have found is there's a certain point where people feel comfortable buying applications, and it's at a certain price point, and I think the idea of setting it low was to get a lot of people to buy it. But again, now that we're sort of flooded in the market and there's so many to choose from, and there's a lot of free offerings, you know, we have to go back to some of our traditional strategies to really sell these products. And I don't know if there's much you can do in terms of how you surface in the Apple Store, but I think one of the biggest things is to really encourage people to give ratings, you know, and give feedback.
Yeah, I've heard that, you know, some of those, like the featured page is pretty arbitrary, right? There's no real reason to. So to be on that, you have to maybe be liked by Apple. The ratings maybe will help you to some extent. I'm not really sure. I think that may help when people find your app. If you have high ratings, they maybe are more likely to buy it. But it's the discovery problem, I think, is still considerable for small app makers. And I mean, I do try to mention smaller apps that I find that, you know, maybe you're still selling, you know, a good number, but are a little more out of the way. But a lot of times I do mention, like, very mega mainstream apps. So, you know, I don't know. I'm fascinated with the idea that the App Store is a lot deeper than you think it is. But in my exploration, I was kind of a little skeptical. But, I mean, that's one of those things. I really like those camera apps, of course, right? Everybody knows that. It's a cool little group of apps available. There hasn't been a lot of new stuff. But one of those that's around that's, you know, that I've tried is Camera Genius. And I don't even know why I feel, like, compelled to review it, because I guess it's not really that good. But there's something about it I sort of like. I can't explain. Like, I feel like it has potential. And, of course, they're always changing these apps. They're always updating them. And there's something about this app that I sort of like. And I think it has a lot of potential. But it has some issues. Like, when you turn it sideways for landscape. And I think usually that's how I take photos. The menu button doesn't turn. Like, that's become an expectation. I know it's kind of ridiculous, but I expect the menu button to turn. It does also take video, though, so unlike some of them, but you can do that. All you have to do is hit a few buttons. It has a quirky interface, but I think there's a sort of a logic to it, and there's two different, like, camera styles, and I don't know. It has some effects, but they're pretty average, especially compared to, like, Pro Camera or Camera Plus Sign. The library. Okay, so you go to, like a lot of the photo apps now, it has the access to the photo library, but it doesn't, like, update itself right. Especially if you sync your photos via iTunes from Aperture, like I do. So that's sort of bad news. And it also crashes. Sometimes the screen stays dark for too long, and you know, it has some bugs. But I feel like, you know, maybe if some people buy it, then that'll encourage them to keep developing it. I feel like it could be pretty cool and pretty distinctive, because there's a certain amount of terrain that's been staked out in these where you really have to come up with something distinctive and different, you know, in terms of interface or look and feel or functionality. And I feel like they're sort of onto it, just a little bit of a different look and feel. One of the things too, though, is it has that kind of, it does more than some camera apps. It bends it bends lines. I don't know, you know, it distorts images a little bit if you take it hastily.
I'm just wondering why you're willing to put up with a lot of negatives about the app.
I'm definitely probably going to go back to using Pro Camera now as my main photo app. Because it is better, but I wanted to say, like, I think this thing could be an interesting competitor. Just like I like Camera Plus Sign. There's some I don't even feel like mentioning that I just don't like, and even that sells somewhat that I don't like. And then, but some of them that I haven't mentioned that I really do. But the thing is, in terms of being a really interesting, distinctive competitor, this could be a third or fourth kind of, you know, app if they can just get a few bug fixes in. You know, they probably put a lot of work into it. Just the way it feels, it seems kind of interesting and different. You know, a little faster, a little better, but I don't know. I kind of like the interface a little bit.
Okay, Camera Genius. So, you've heard it from Lovebirds Consulting. We like your app, but we want you to fix some bugs in the UI. So, call us if you need some help.
Well, yeah, and I don't presume to know. I you could definitely help them a lot. I wouldn't presume to say I had the solution for them, but I think, you know, it'd be interesting. I mean, I'd certainly love to take a look at their code. You know, I don't know, because it probably just needs a little, you know, just a little bit of work, like code generation, you know, a lot of times does. You know, but yeah, that's cool. Then there's, you know, I also wanted to mention Pro HDR, if I'm not running too long with the iOS photo apps. Pro HDR is kind of cool. It actually takes more like an HDR. I don't know what the Apple thing does. You know, but is that really HDR, the default camera app, you know, on iOS 4 with the HDR function? It's neat. It's another perspective of the photo. Sometimes it gives you richer detail. But it's so instantaneous with the photo that it's not really two exposures. Like, Pro HDR, it takes two different exposures. It takes a lighter one and a darker one. You kind of see the lightness and the darkness on the screen as it's taking it. I'm not saying it's better. You got to hold your hand really still because there is a little bit of time in between the images. And I'm not saying it's even better than Apple's built-in one. I think there's some good things. That's probably the best thing to be said about the built-in camera app. It is pretty neat that they have that. But the Pro HDR gives you an auto HDR setting, a manual HDR setting where you give it a little help about where's darker and where's lighter. I press some buttons on the screen. It's pretty simple. And then there's library HDR, so you can take photos that you have and make, you know, try to make HDR style images out of them. And I think it's I'm not a, you know, I don't really know too much about HDR, and I'm not going to assume this actually does like what, you know, what some experts would call technically HDR, but it has a very cool feel. It fills out a lot of details. It can give you some interesting shots in situations, or you can, it gives you, you know, contrast and tint and controls like that as you're on your, you know, as you're finalizing the photos. You can also take it in different directions, you know, grayer or fantastical, you know, colors, or, you know, different ways like that too. So it's, you know, I think it's pretty neat. But if you're looking for an interesting free app, I think you should check out Adobe Photoshop Express. If you haven't checked that out, just check that out now. Because what they did with that is they built in a camera. It used to have, like, the ability to edit photos a little bit on your iPhone. Very basic, and it's still basic, but they also built in a camera app. So now you can just select your Photoshop Express app and take photos with it. And it has a pretty good-looking photo interface. And so, actually, that's another. This is the third app that's already there, I think. This one is pretty good. It gives you really basic, you know, mobile Photoshop. It's not exactly comparable to a desktop Photoshop experience, but it's comparable to some other, you know, photo adjusting tools and, you know, that are in iOS. So it's pretty cool, I think.
What would you say that the trend is for all these mobile photo apps? Because, you know, they're really not the quality of our digital cameras.
Well, not like our Nikon or
right,
our Panasonic.
Nor the quality
no.
of a lot of, you know, computer-based programs. I guess for me,
okay.
I feel like being in the photo space for about 5 years now and always being interested in photography, and what I'm seeing more and more is it's a fun way to share what you're doing. And working at American Greetings, which is, you know, over 100 years old, people love to share their emotions, and there's a big trend right now
yeah.
of sharing things visually because we have become such a visual society. And, you know, I think a lot of what these apps are doing is taking it to the next level. So instead of just sharing a photo, you know, now you can add borders, you can add filters, you can crop and edit on the go. I mean, you know, a lot of people who use these apps also use higher end cameras and desktop apps as well. But because we're so mobile and because you want to share, having those abilities to edit and crop and create that little mini piece of art on the go is what I think is so wonderful. Because at the end of the day, I still like to share a good piece of content. You know, I still like to edit it, enhance it, have some fun with it. You know, I'm not going to just throw up anything onto my social networks because that's not the kind of photographer that I am. And I think a lot of professional photographers want some of those options to share mobily. So I think it's really cool that they're getting into the mobile space, and I think we're going to see more and more evolutions there, especially with now the iPad 2, and I'm wondering when I can stop calling it the iPad 2, having a camera on it. I think we're going to see a lot more innovation in mobile apps for the camera.
Yeah, I think that is a great way of summing it up, and I agree with you. Thanks for joining me, Jessica. It's been a good podcast. You've been listening to the DJMblog.com podcast, number 6, with me, Daniel J. McKeown. And the show notes are available at DJMblog.com/podcast-6.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I got your I got the drum kit turned on so we can play out the drum. You're in Logic, but it's okay. Yeah. So, you know about the supermoon?
I do. I'm really excited to see it tonight, Saturday, March 19th.
Yeah.
It's going to be the closest to the Earth that it has been in almost 20 years.
I guess it was one of the last times was 1993, and then I guess there was an, there may have, yeah, I'm not sure, was there another time in between, and now 2011? Is it the closest it's been since 1993?
I think so. And it should be really great to photograph. Everybody loves awesome moon photos. You should be able to get some really good crater shots and a lot of illumination tonight. So get your cameras out and head out and take some pictures of our super moon.
Yeah, and we'll see if you're listening to this podcast after today, as we recorded, we'll see what we can do. We'll try to take some photos of the moon and see, you know, see if we can get some good ones, maybe post them. What did you think of Michigan State against UCLA?
You know, I was talking with some people about it, and I think Michigan State is an amazing comeback team, and I think throughout the whole season, really, from the couple of games that I've watched, they just run out of time. You know, they really need to establish a lead early on with that aggressive force that they have with the comeback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I you know, so what else is going on? Were there any other points we were going to cover?
I think just one other point about pacificpelican.us/CMS, the PHP-based URL shortening and file uploading app, which is available for free to download. You can customize it for your own site. So this is a really great tool brought to you by Lovebirds Consulting to our users for you to share and download and integrate into your site. Just a sample of the technology that we can build for you and your business.
Yeah. Well, you know, you having your own URL shortener is becoming something that a lot of companies have either just recently implemented or are looking to. And this gives you a chance to just have a simple text-based URL shortener. And we're looking to build it out and expand it. So the more users that we have downloading and using it and giving us feedback, the more we know what direction to take it in. Because we were just talking about how, you know, what's the priority direction that the web user interface, or to build an API so that it can work with stuff like bookmarklets and stuff like that. Also, you know, there's different kinds of hacks, like maybe include an htaccess script so that it can, instead of having the question mark and query string, like question mark r equals, and then the number, it can just have slash, you know, the number. And like Jessica says, you can customize it for your own domain. You can drop your own style.css in there and style it. It has a divs with IDs and classes. And the other thing that it does detect, at least use PHP to try to detect, and it works on the test sites I put it on, it detects your URL. If you have a it'll name your site kind of automatically, like at the top of the page and stuff, based on, you know, just the URL. So it'll help your site automatically have URL title branding. So in Google results, for example, it'll come up with your domain in the title. I think there's a lot that can be expanded on. And so thanks, Jessica, for giving me that good summary about it.
You're welcome.